Welcome to the Priority Lane podcast. I'll be your host today, Lawrence Dauncey. My guest today is James King of King Financial Planning. James has been in the financial services industry for almost 30 years, started life, as I understand it, as I will call it, a refreshment executive. For those of you of a similar age will know that he was a tea boy, and I'm sure he'll go into that shortly. But so welcome, James. Thank you very much for taking the time to chat to us.
No problem, Lawrence. Nice to see you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we had a nice chat a few weeks ago, and I'm glad you agreed to come on. So I'm going to kick it off. As I mentioned, you were a refreshment executive, yeah. I believe, yeah. For Friends Provident many years ago. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's not many people have ever called me that, really. I was that tin boy. Yeah, no, it was 1989. The world was a very different place. I was gonna be a PE teacher, believe it or not. But then a friend of mine said there was a job at French Provident, and I went to meet at that time she was the only manager of a French Provident branch, of which there were 37,
and that's right.
A lady, and she was a formidable lady, a lady called Margaret Davis, and you sort of met her, and you never really said no to her. Really, that was just what happened. So from there, I'm suddenly working in this office, not knowing what I'm doing. And I walked up and down with a proper tea urn and made people cups of tea and coffee. And that was my role in life. that was the starting point.
It's not a bad start. At least you started somewhere. So no. When we spoke a couple of weeks ago, you made an interesting point that I noted down. And I think we were talking about initially the sort of cohesive relationship between a financial advisor, accountants, and, you know, all the other professional services that you guys work with. And your point, it was a very good point, was do they actually know what we do? Yeah. So my question is, and, you know, for all the listeners, what does a week look like for a financial planner? What do you actually do?
Well, that's a good question. It changes. I mean, the beauty of this job is that it changes all of the time, you know. So today I'm having a meeting with a big firm accountants to do some work with them. I'm doing this, and then I'm off to do the ladies' AGM at our golf club. So that's my day today, picking up some money from my charity that I'm chairman and trustee of. it's changed a lot. Everything's evolved a lot over the years. I think, you know, most financial planners have done this job for a while. You know, the investment piece is fairly easy. You have a thought process. You know what you're going to do. You see a new client. You have in your mind what that will look like. I think it's more about the true value of what we do is the planning piece. It's about sitting down with people and saying, okay, this is where you are. Where do you want to get to? How do we enable you to get there? But then it's all the bumps in the road. And you know, over the last 6 to 8 weeks, I've had two clients die. I've had one client that's had to go into a care home. I've got one client that's got dementia and sadly needs extra care. You know, this is all the stuff that as financial planners we deal with, and it's nothing to do with, you know, Donald Trump does over in the Middle East or what Rachel Ridley does as far as tax is concerned. They obviously have massive effects.
Sure.
Being that trusted advisor and helping people through their lives. And I think more and more now, my role is to try to get people to enjoy their money and to spend it and to do things with it rather than wait for tomorrow, because who knows where we are. And I encourage people to do that more and more. So, you know, that is very much the role. As I said, the beauty of this great job is that it changes every day.
Okay. Would you agree that most advisory firms are, you know, built on trust, reputation. You know, as we discussed, the average age of a financial advisor in the UK is 58.
Yeah.
You know, and below 30 and below makes up 5.7% only, and only 18% are women. But in terms of the advisory firms, I mean, as we did touch on, that it is built, you know, predominantly on trust and reputation. And in terms of referrals, for example, and succession, when you've had clients who passed on, you know, how important is you know, are client referrals in growing business today? Is it still the same? Has it got, more? I mean, how is it now?
I mean, you touched on the age thing. I think that's a really important point. I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit more, but you know, we need to bring new blood into this industry and profession. Okay. And you know, it is vitally important. Trust is a key thing. That's why you tend to find that advisors keep their clients for a long period of time. You know, everybody does all these surveys about the fact that, you know, nobody trusts their financial advisor, but they trust their own. Well, that's a bit of a strange statement, is it? But you hear that all the time, you know, because actually people all don't trust financial services people, but apart from my one's a good one. And people tend to stay with their advisors. You know, I've got clients that I've dealt with since the late 90s. And they stayed with us over that time period, coming back to the, you know, what do you do all day? You know, that changes as they get older and you do different things. But trust is very important. I get most of my new work comes from my existing clients.
Okay.
I think a lot of other advisors are in a similar position. Getting new work is there's lots of work out there. It's whether it's who wants to do what work and at what numbers. You know, we as an industry have gone from a point where when I first started, I'd have done a £50 a month PEP. You know, going back to, you know, it's literally do any piece of business you possibly can.
But yeah,
the strange thing about, you know, our world now is there's less and less advisors. And so people have become more and more picky. And you're in a place where RDR changed the world because suddenly people were made to generate recurring income, which they hadn't really done in the past. It was all, you know, initial fee, initial commissions, get as much as you can, and then go and get another client. Whereas the sort of the first model of 3.5, what that meant was that people were starting to build up recurring income. Therefore, those advisors are suddenly, over a number of years, have suddenly got revenues coming in, you know, and so they can be a bit more picky on who they look after and who they don't. And then you're this whole statistic of, you know, only 9% of people or whatever it is, something like that, actually get any advice because the advisors that are left are only dealing with the high net worth clients, or largely big generalization, but it is sort of true, you know. I would have a slight take on that, but yeah, so it's there are lots of clients out there. We as an industry need to build trust as a bigger picture, not for individuals like me or lots of other advisors that've got great clients and deal with them themselves. We need the world to know that actually it's a pretty trustworthy organization, industry.
Sure. So for you, your referrals or any new business come from existing clients?
Yes and no. I mean, in historically, obviously, my background is I was a partner in a firm of chartered accountants, a firm called Price Bailey. I worked for Mackintosh Hudson Chartered Accountants before that. So my, you know, my specialism, if you don't have any, is working, you know, financial planning and the accountancy world together. So most of my clients came from the accountancy practice because I was there best part of 20 years.
Sure.
So they were referrals, but they happened to be referrals from audit partners or tax people or corporate finance people that I worked with and were colleagues, and we worked on clients together. So, you know, if people are trying to get new work, obviously space and professional connections, it's very boring. People have heard this a million times before. There are some great people out there. What you have to understand, coming back to your earlier point, is that lots of the times these people don't really understand what we do. And so the whole educational piece that you have to keep going through time and time again is incredibly important. And just don't give up is my answer.
Yeah, it's just because it was just interesting to find out, you know, now, you know, how other advisors, how does it happen that they get new clients? You know, let's put aside the fact, of course, that, you know, we have, you build up trust over however many years it is, and, you know, your existing clients will, you know, recommend you potentially to someone else. But for those who don't have the longevity that you do, my question is, how do they make it happen? How do they get new clients, new business on board?
I think there's an element, you know, the old sales sort of stuff is you want to put as much in the hopper as you can, and it starts to filter down. And so that is going to local marketed events, going to being members of various clubs, rotary types, all those types of things that are all out there, business breakfasts, all that stuff. But also, I do believe professional connections is a really big, strong way forward to get new business. But you have to, again, coming back to stuff that you said earlier, trust is the key word. So the accountancy profession, lawyers, others, they, because there is an underlying not sure what these guys do or what they can benefit my clients, you have to build on that. You have to go in and you have to, you know, do things like CPD events, talk to some of their clients, do some stuff, some educational stuff, put on lunches, take people out, just constantly do things for the accountancy firm, the law firm, that they feel could actually help their clients, because that's the key bit. Most of these people just want to look after their clients. That's their aim. And if you can keep doing that and do a good job, then eventually one or two things start to happen. They start to understand you a little bit more, and you can start to move that forward. But it's a slow process. It doesn't happen all of the time. So it's worth doing. You know, the professional firms have some great clients, and they do trust their advisor. You know, they trust their accountant, they trust their lawyer, especially their accountants, because they know so much about them. So if the accountant puts you in front of a client, then you've got a good chance of winning some work.
So for me, I'm reading that the correlation between the age demographic that I mentioned and the trust that obviously you need, it puts you guys, obviously that's why the average age is 58, because they've got the longevity, they've got the history, so therefore they've got the trust. That then for me on the flip side is then makes it very difficult for the younger generation or younger advisors coming in trying to build that trust.
Yeah.
Because the majority have already got, you know, have already kind of taken a big slice of the pie. So, you know, in terms of that, how would the younger generation, how can they break into it? And, you know, what about encouragement from obviously, you know, likes of yourself and, you know, and other, you know, senior peers in the industry?
But if you go back to my early days at Friends Provident, there were 37 branches of Friends Provident. Standard Life had the same, and Scottish Equitable had the same, and Scottish Gamma Club had the same, and Norwich Union had the same, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Insurance companies everywhere. And the banks did financial services. Barclays went in and came back out again, then went back in and come back out again. Coutts, NatWest, all of these people had huge organizations that did financial services, and it was the breeding ground. I'm the prime example. Lots of people of my age started at a bank, or they started at an insurance company. The issue we have now is that, you know, in the 90s, the contracts were terrible. Okay, there was lots of fat in it, and everybody made loads of money. Yeah, so you had lots of people running around, you can employ loads of people, and the service was brilliant, but the contracts were terrible. Look at today. And the contracts that people have got compared to the 90s, you know, the end user is paying peanuts compared to what they would have paid in the 90s.
Okay.
Therefore, the insurance companies aren't in this world anymore because they can't make any money out of it. And so there's no breeding ground for new people to come on board, no people to cut their teeth and understand. So this is where we've ended up with this issue, because advisors like me only deal with high net worth clients, or more and more people at that end.
Sure.
So you've got this big problem. And we need the big guns, the Quilters, the St. James's Place, the banks, to come back into this smaller market, to put academies together. But it's not just about that. I listened to Kathy from the Verve Group recently, and they do quite a lot about bringing new people on. And they had some stuff going on with bringing new recruits and training them up. And they've got loads and loads of people want to do it. Problem is, there are no jobs. Yeah. So it's not necessarily there aren't the people, it's actually the roles within it. And it sort of comes back to my point, because those roles aren't there. And our financial planning industry is a cottage industry. There's loads of three advisor firms, one in my case now, sort of gone from one to the other. And so it's very difficult for somebody to take on a trainee or take on somebody that doesn't have any clients. It's only the really big guys that need to do that. And I think the regulator is trying to help with, you know, guidance and all the stuff that's coming through that. That will be really interesting to see. And that could mean that more people get involved with the industry. I think that's a good thing. I think the government probably pushing that to make that happen. So hopefully some of the big guys who will come back in. We've seen recently, I think NatWest just came to the market and bought Evelyn and you know that looks like they're going to come back in and be involved. Let's hope more of that comes in, which is strange for us, you know, it's ultimately competition for us. But we as industry, we need these big guys to come back so that the pipeline of youngsters have got jobs to learn and access these clients, and maybe we can start to deal with more than 9% of the marketplace.
Right. That's good. Yes, that's right. NatWest, I think, I saw it February the 8th or 9th, I think they mentioned that they were acquiring or buying Evelyn Partners quite a significant fee.
Big number.
And then NatWest doing that, do you think that will potentially open up the maybe some new roles or some space for, you know, new blood to come in?
I hope so. I think that's hopefully the intention. I think the signals from the regulators to try to make, you know, if you think about it, for me, if a client comes along and wants to put £20,000 into an ISA, I have to do a lot of work to get through. Attitude to risk, suitability letter, so many different checks, so much paperwork, that's why people can't deal with that anymore. So you need to use a combination of technology and people and process so that we can actually look after these people. And I think that the regulator, with a nudge from the government, are actually looking at that and trying to find ways to simplify, you know, going back in history, regulation has gone from one extreme to the other. When I first started, basically it was in Avenue. And then we've gone so far one way that actually it's pushed a huge amount of people into this savings gap. And I think what they're trying to achieve is to try and push that back. So somebody like NatWest and the Evelyn deal, and I think there'll be other things like that to happen, what they're looking at is saying, okay, if there's a way that we can get to market to access maybe some of the smaller clients, but we can do it in a way that's profitable, because ultimately these are all businesses, they're not charities, then maybe they will come back to market. Then they do need people with a combination of technology, which is obviously never going to go away now.
No, that's true. So, going back just quickly on the referral side of things and the trust issue, you know, that we've talked about. I mean, do you think today, in 2026, that majority or, the number of advisory firms, they have structured, systemized, ways of generating referrals, that it's still very much the informal sort of meet across the industry, you know what I mean? Like it's who you know, not what.
I think so. I think especially, I think at all levels, really, there's very few firms. There are some, but they're the exception rather than the rule. I think most firms are, they've been around a long time, or advisors have been around a long time. Average age 58. You know, I'm still just staying under it just. So only just. I don't think there are, very many firms with a referral program out there. I don't really think about it.
Interesting.
And they should be. You should be having your target market. I'm as bad as anybody. I've been very lucky in my working career because I've worked largely with accountants. So my role has always been to get work from them. But as you started this conversation, if you don't have that, then you need to find other ways of getting work through, and building up that trust.
Sure. So, I mean, that brings the human element, which is a big favorite of mine. As I said, people are the source, technology is the tool. There's no getting away from that. So, moving forward, it's difficult to find the balance, between that human element and using the technology. And, we talked about that and what, my broker's app provides, and hopefully that, that does provide that balance. The other thing that we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, and that I read an article, I think in one of the PA360 articles recently, is client time versus regulations for advisors. I've read a lot and heard a lot that you know, advisors, they're saying they're not getting enough time, you know, or face time with their clients due to, you know, all the work and regulations and paperwork, like you mentioned, that they have to do. You know, and with the introduction of consumer duty and the other compliance sort of stuff, what do you think firms could do to protect that client time? What you know, how can they maximize that in the, you know, with all the other things that, you know, that they have to follow?
I think it is very difficult, and consumer duty was the big issue for a lot of, especially big firms, because suddenly they were in a situation where they had to, you know, prove that they were doing some work for the money they were being paid. I mean, heaven forbid, hey, heaven forbid. But what it does do, again, you know, regulation for everybody means that suddenly you're going to see a client and you're having to write to them every year and confirm something that they already know and tell them stuff that they've already been told three times before in the same year. And it just costs you more time and more money. And so when you're dealing with somebody with 20, 30, 40,000 pounds, it's almost impossible to look after those clients properly because it just isn't profitable, which comes back to this whole loop of how do you deal with smaller clients? And give them a good service, but you know that is a very difficult thing to do. So technology has got to be one of the answers moving forward. Sure. A lot of our time as advisors and our team's time is spent dealing with providers. So you see a new client, you need a letter of authority for five different pensions and two ISAs. Yeah. Then you get the client to sign them largely in blood because the providers don't take it in any other way. Then you send it off to them and then they lose it. And then it comes, then you send it again and then they don't send you any info. Then you chase it. Then you get 57 pages of nonsense with only needed two. And then somebody at RN has to decipher it all and then put it all together. You know, there is technology that's partly already out there and partly will be coming that will deal with the letters of authority, will take the information and put it into a suitability letter, and that will streamline those systems a lot.
Yeah.
And that will take away partly what the advisor does, but a lot of the stuff that the admin teams do. And therefore, maybe those admin people can do other stuff that the advisor might be doing. Because ultimately, what you want to get to is the advisor, all he does is what he's good at. Is talk to his clients. That's the aim. So if you can automate as much as possible, and this is not necessarily today, but over the next few years, I think this becomes, you know, easier and easier. Automate more and more of the back office stuff, and then staff you've got do other things. Client
allow you to get on, do the job.
Yeah, value stuff. So all people like me do is the easy bit, which is go and talk to the clients and then feed that back. And I think some other bits, you know, I've been trialing some stuff with a firm called Aveni, which is just dictation really. But you record the meeting and then pulls through to some notes, which you then can, it's 80-90% right, but then you can immediately links to a back office, in our case IO, and you can save it in there. It just saves a bit of time. It's not perfect, but these things are all evolving, you know.
Yeah, and of course. No, I mean, as we, you know, we talked about, that's, you know, it's important, and there are, you know, there are systems out there. I think, you know, you mentioned in, I think, one of your interviews on PATV that you found it's still a lot quite muddled, I think was the word you used, and, you know, we get that. So,
yeah,
you know, but there is, as you know, some technology that is auditable. So, you know, they can, you know, whatever you put through, which would also, you know, alleviate the consumer duty pressure because you're able to do it, you know,
proof.
in the palm of your hand.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if you can provide, you know, proof that you've been in contact, you've given the service that you're supposed to be, you know, doing, you know, and you'll be able to do it with palm of the hand connectivity via an app would be, you know, is great. And it is coming. So yes, I totally agree.
And I think what you describe is completely true. You know, most advisors see their clients all the time, but if it's not written down, then it didn't exist. And from a regulatory point of view, that's the point, isn't it? It needs to be saved on a system somewhere to say that you've done what you said you've done. And if you can find it, use technology in a way to enable that, and that's got to be a way forward and save people lots of time and anguish, quite frankly, down the line.
it's no longer just a piece of paper with their signature and a check. It's
absolutely.
They were the easy days.
In the good old days, we didn't even have to do letters. We just got checks, you know.
Long time ago.
Well, maybe you should revisit.
Yeah. I'm not sure the regulator let us do that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, talking about the good old days, obviously that brings, I say again, the aging population demographic that we talked upon, talked about earlier. And a lot of my work talking with, financial advisories is trying to discover and understand, what plans do they have in place as for the business to mitigate key person risk, succession, if, for example, the leader of the firm who's built relationships, personality-led rather than system-led, when he chooses to exit, for example, how is that going to, does he sell the business? And if he does, are the business value multiples where they should be if he hasn't got, technology involved? What I'm asking is, how do you, for example, you just said you're not far from 58, you're still well below, but when you choose to exit, whenever that is, do you have a strategy? Do you have an exit strategy in place?
I think I've still got a couple more years left in me. But I think what you need to do is you need to bring new advisors on board. And there has to be a period, me and most of the financial planning world that's dealt with their clients for years are very, very loyal to who we work for. Our clients mean a lot to us because you build up long-term trust and you get to be part of their lives. So the last thing that we all want to make money. That's part of what we do it for. But also we want to make sure that they're looked after. So, you've got to be sure who you're, if you're going to sell your business, you're selling to the right people. And I think in my mind, I would bring somebody on board a year before I was going to retire and slowly introduce those to my clients over a period of time. And maybe then still be around for another 6 months to a year to, if needed, just to go to meetings, just to be there, just to reassure people. So I think it's something that needs to be planned for. Rather than I'm off to Barbados now, off you go.
I'm gonna go.
I know lots of advisors, they're a pretty good bunch of people largely, and they want to do the best for their clients, want to make sure they're looked after.
I agree, and I think a year I would say it would be a minimum in order to really build up that that relationship to introduce, because if we don't see an increase in younger talent in the industry, what do you think happens?
Well, it just gets worse and worse. The whole savings gap gets worse and worse. We're into a place where people just stop saving. The involvement or the bringing forward of auto enrollment was a good thing because it at least got people to put money into pensions at a certain level. Unfortunately, nobody understands what they're invested in most of the time. So that's a real issue. It's completely true because people do the bare minimum and don't necessarily explain things to people. But actually, people do stop saving or they do what the government is trying to stop people doing is they save into cash. Which actually over the long term isn't the right thing to do. We all know that, but you need somebody to explain to you that actually, getting a 2% return on your cash rate when inflation is 3.5% means technically you are actually losing money. But people don't see it that way. They see the balance go up and there's no risk and they don't understand the value of investing over the long term. And so if there's less and less people out there, we either get to a point where it's just really big organizations, the consolidators just pick this stuff up.
Yeah.
And that's probably where we get to. But actually, I'm slightly biased, but a lot of the small, really well-run quality firms out there give great value. We want to make sure we can keep those going. But we do need to find ways of bringing in new talent into this industry. And as a collective, we need to find a better way of doing it, which for God knows how many years now we haven't managed to do.
No. I mean, going back just very quickly to that, you're talking about the savings gap, et cetera, and the fact that, most people have got like a cash ISA or something that, like you say, they're actually losing money, but because it goes up a couple of quid or whatever it might be, they're okay. Do you think there's a fear factor at all where I think money and investing is concerned? Yeah. I mean,
go ahead. I think I think there's, again, it's a good point. You know,
it might be lack of knowledge, perhaps.
It's a lack of knowledge. It's a lack of understanding of tax. It's a lack of understanding of what long-term returns could be. And because they've got nobody to talk to, you know. Right. If you go back in history, I've gone so old. If you go back in history, you had somebody knocking on the door and it was the man from the Peru. You had the Allied Dunbars, you had the various, you know, I'll come back to it. The contracts were pretty terrible, but actually lots of us have built off the back of people knocking on people's doors and people putting into endowment plans because there was somebody there that they could trust and felt that they could put the money into. We struggle with that part, and that's a big, big issue, I'm afraid. We need to find ways to actually, you know, get people to save again because people are nervous. And if you, prime example, you know, lots of people tried to come into this industry with robo advice. If you remember a few years ago, everybody was going to do robo advice. Didn't work.
No.
Because you need a person. So the key part, there's a great little business up in Barnsley called Lifetime. And what they're doing is they're doing a combination of coaches and financial advisors and technology. So you as a client would be assigned a coach and they look after you and they can do a little cash flow and they can talk about where you are. And then if you need to do anything regulatory, you can be assigned to an advisor and they do that. Then they use technology to get around Consumer Duty by all of the review process and everything else is done with technology and holograms. And it's really, really clever. And then the next time in your annual review meeting, when you see somebody completely different, you're not wedded to that particular coach or that particular advisor, you're wedded to the firm. And that to me makes sense. You've got to find ways of scaling that. Actually, you've still got a person that you can talk to, but they can do this for £20,000, £30,000 investments.
Right. For the lower values.
It's not for the high net worth people necessarily. I'm sure they do a great job with that. But for the smaller stuff, it would be, you know, you can be anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world as the advisor looking after people. And to me, that hybrid solution is a great answer. And I think more and more of that's going to hopefully come forward.
That sounds fascinating. I know you did touch on Lifetime when we spoke 2 weeks ago. And I found that fascinating because, you know, for me personally, you know, I wouldn't know where to start or who to speak to. Well, you now, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, if I had a lump sum and thought rather than shove it in a, you know, 20 grand in a cash ISA, what opportunities are out there? What exactly can I put my money into, you know? And I don't know, I don't know where to go or where to find those answers. So, you know, I think me mentioning perhaps, you know, the fear factor, it's also a, you know, lack of knowledge. I just don't know. And what I want to know is what are, you know, the big firms or the smaller firms, what are they actually doing to get it into the public domain that there are opportunities and it isn't scary?
Yeah. Well, again, I think, you know, it all stems maybe from the early stages. You're almost getting into the schools, aren't you? And actually the education from children and curriculum and what happens there, because none of this stuff is talked about or, you know, basic tax stuff and things like that. Things actually kids really need to understand, never really talked about. But again, you know, the difficulty for our industry is it needs the big boys to do this because the financial planning community is largely lots of small little businesses. So you need the big, you know, your JP Morgans who bought Nutmeg and they're doing lots of advertising. That's great. I don't have a problem with any of this stuff. I don't view it as competition. We just need more and more people to understand actually there's another option. Because actually what you would do as a sort of a typical person there, you've got some money, you end up talking to your bank and you might do 20 grand into your cash ISA, 12 grand coming forward soon. And then you'll find the best savings rate, you know, and that's it, you know, because you go, well, I'm a bit worried about putting into that S&P 500 thing or that FTSE 100. I'm not quite sure what that all is. And that could go down, can't it? So, or you go the other way if you're kids and you look at all of the influencers on there and put it all into Bitcoin, which is the other problem from the other end.
Yeah, I just found it fascinating. And of course, I mean, you're right. You know, JP Morgan, Fisher Investments, and there's a, you know, St. James's Place. I've seen and heard, you know, adverts for them on the radio and on TV. So they're there, but there doesn't seem to be enough traction or enough visibility for, you know, the average Joe like me to, you know, actually know where am I going to put, what are my options, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. You
know,
yeah.
Luckily, I've now met you and, you know, it could well be an opportunity.
You'll be fine. You'll be fine.
Yeah, but I've only got you for a few years.
Well, then, at least five more in me, you know.
And then you'll be off to La Manga, La Touquet, and all the other places.
Playing bad golf somewhere.
That's good. That's really, really good. What I wanted to talk to you about or ask you a question about now is, you know, we talked about exiting and succession and that sort of thing. And I wanted to see, you know, get your take on firm, you know, business value multiples and the succession side of things. So I've written something down here that I saw, and it was when advisory firms talk about succession or exit planning, business valuation, of course, would be a key topic. What drives, in your opinion, what drives that firm valuation?
Okay. I think more and more it's becoming a bit more sophisticated. The days of just 3x recurring income or 4x recurring income, that still happens. That is still definitely out there. But I think more and more of the firms are looking at things like the book of business, the age of the clients and the longevity of those clients. You know, if you've got loads of clients who are in their 70s and 80s, then the value of that book really should be a lot less than it should be if you've got people in their 40s and their 50s. I know that's not rocket science, but it's sort of, you know, people have never really used to talk about that type of thing, but they do now. I think processing systems is really important. I think, you know, again, the consolidators, the old model was where you've got somebody that's been paying 0.5%, we'll stick them up to 1%. So it doesn't really matter because we'll make a load more money on it. But that's becoming harder and harder to do because there's less firms out there to consolidate, quite frankly. Yeah. So the only way you can make money and increase where you are is by using technology and systems to reduce your costs. Slim things down to enable advisors to see more clients and onboard things moving forward. And I think if firms get their business ready for sale, and they need to do this, you know, way before they're actually selling it, but be in a situation where actually they do have the systems in place, they do have their client proposition, they do know their numbers, when they talk to people, the value of that is going to go up a lot more than it is just saying, here's my Excel spreadsheet and here's a load of files.
Yeah, no,
it does happen.
I'm sure. But obviously, I totally agree with you. You know, it's kind of hit the nail on the head, what you said. It is, without a doubt, it is about planning, across the board, because, you know, like you say, if it is, the key person risk, it's been personality led for 30, 40 years, you know, and they haven't introduced, you know, maybe technology or systems that allow, you know, one-touch communication via mobile apps or anything, you know, something like that. And they haven't brought on any to more younger blood, whether it be via the government apprenticeship schemes or anything else like that, then those multiples are going to be lower than they probably probably expected. So that's a key thing. Well, that's great. Listen, we're going to come to a close shortly, but before I do, I wanted to ask if you had any advice for, you know, younger generation coming into the industry, what advice will you give them to get into the business?
I think there are very, very few roles in life where you can get such satisfaction in helping people and, quite frankly, earn good money. There's not many things that you can get paid well for if you do a good job where you can get paid well along the line. If you build your own business, you get value at the end, but ultimately you get huge satisfaction in helping people. If you're not the person that really likes helping people, it's probably the wrong role for you. But, you know, I love dealing with my clients. I love my job. I hate the compliance stuff. I hate all of that rubbish that you have to do around it. But actually seeing people and talking to people and getting to know them, there's not many greater jobs. You know, I'd prefer to have been a professional footballer, but I just wasn't good enough. So, you know, this has worked well for me over, God, 30-odd years. And I'm incredibly lucky to have met so many people and done so many things because of this industry. And that's why I always say to people, it's a great industry. We do so many great things, not me, but as a community, the financial planning community, people do so many great things. And, you know, we're just not very good at telling people. Sort of best kept secret, I think, sometimes.
Right.
So to youngsters, I would say, please get involved. It's a great job.
No, brilliant. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining me. You know, thanks for your time and your pearls of wisdom, as always.
Sure,
and I look forward to our next meeting, yeah. You know, and whenever that may be, on the golf course in the 19th. That's what I wanted to ask you. So over the course of my business career, I've done deals in the 19th at a golf club. Has that happened for you in the IFA industry?
I've got a couple of clients because of the golf clubs.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely helped. That's my excuse.
Yeah. I've got to go to the golf club. I've got to see a client. No, it's good.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Works well.
Well, listen, thanks again for your time. And, you know, we'll catch up soon.
No, pleasure, Lawrence. Lovely to see you. Take care.
This episode is sponsored by My Brokers App, a white label app built specifically for financial advisors and wealth management professionals. If you want to know how you can have your own app exclusively for your business and your clients up and running by this time next week, visit mybrokers.app or download the free My Brokers demo app from your favorite app store.